Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as he always does, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Flawless victory.
Nice.
Yeah, we decided that we were going to do a profile not on a person, but on a company that has ceased to be. It is
sort of
rung up the curtain and joined the choir invisible.
Well, ceased to be as an independent company.
Yeah, we're talking about Midway Games, and Midway Games has a special place in my heart because they actually published one of my favorite video games of all time.
Gee, which one would that be?
You might have two or three titles going through your head.
Yeah, but considering your quote.
No, it is not that one.
It's not that one?
It's not Mortal Kombat.
Really?
That's probably the most famous title that Midway published, but is not the title that's my favorite.
Okay, which one is your favorite?
Spy Hunter.
Oh, yeah. Mine, too.
I mean, you got the Peter Gunn theme, and you got the cool spy car with guns and stuff. And I mean, I like the old, old classic Spy Hunter game.
Yeah, we're talking the one that you look down on top of the car, not the remake where you're in the car. Oh, that was kind of fun, too.
Yeah, but the overhead view and especially the ones that had the cockpit style console. So you were sitting down and you were, you know, completely enveloped and you just had that Peter Gunn theme playing and glorious, glorious low fidelity.
Yeah.
So, but yes, the Midway Games has sadly fallen on hard times to the point where the company is no more than just a name really at this point.
Right.
But let's kind of set the whole story here. So, going way back into the 60s, Midway was a company that was developing and producing equipment for amusement parks and fairgrounds.
Right.
So the name made sense. The Midway, that was the area of a carnival where you would find all the games.
Right.
So and rides as well. That's the Midway. So Midway starts off developing various games for amusement parks. And in 1969, they were purchased by another company that became known for producing lots of games and amusements, Bally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those of you who have listened to our pinball podcast, you may have heard us talk about Bally. Actually, Midway as well, because both companies did produce pinball machines.
Yes.
And back then, that's pretty much what the coin-operated divisions of these companies were concentrating on, producing pinball machines.
Well, they didn't have video games at that point.
Yes, this predates predates video games, really.
Not that didn't exist on an oscillator in a lab.
Right. So eventually, video games do start to emerge. People begin to play with this idea. And Midway published a couple, but the first one of any real note that they published was in 1978, and it was a biggie. Mm-hmm. Now, before this, they had made one of their – probably one of the earliest and biggest blunders. They turned down the opportunity to publish a certain video game that became synonymous with the early days of video games. It was a creation of a Mr. Nolan Bushnell. You know what I'm talking about?
Chuck E. Cheese?
Pong.
Oh, that the earlier creation of Nolan Bushnell.
Yes, Pong. So Pong was they had the opportunity to publish Pong, and they turned it down. But they did not turn down the opportunity to publish a video game from a Japanese company called Taito called Space Invaders. Boom. Bum, 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 bum. Pew, pew. This is our sad attempt at recreating the Space Invaders.
I'll improve my Foley technique.
Maybe we can get Liz to throw in like an electronic beep here and there for this podcast. So Space Invaders comes out in 1978. Now, for those of you younger listeners who never played or saw Space Invaders, or maybe you've only seen it in one of those arcades where they have like the classic console where it has five or six different games, and then Space Invaders is one of them, you may not realize that this was an enormous hit in the video game world. I mean, you can't really understate how big this was.
Yeah, I mean, in 1978, I was 7 years old, and you know, I remember Space Invaders machines being at skating rinks, and you know, people used to roller skate in the 70s.
Right.
And pizza parlors.
Yes, this was before inline skating.
Yeah, yep. A lot of people still quad skate, but it wasn't, you know, at that time, that was a big thing to do. And,
yeah.
And there were, you know, any place where you might find a video game, because they really didn't have video arcades. I never really saw one until the 80s.
Yeah, I remember so the 70s, seeing them in bars.
Yeah.
Because that's where my dad would leave me. He'd go next door to write. Just tell the people inside, look after this kid, will you? I'm just kidding. My dad never, ever left me in a bar. Mom, that's a different story. Yeah. But anyway, so no. My parents are fantastic.
Did they listen to the podcast?
I don't know.
Because you're going to get listener mail from them.
I'll find out. So at any rate, Space Invaders was in lots of these different little locations. And one of the reasons why it was such a huge hit was it introduced a new concept into video games that did not exist at that point. There was no way to win Space Invaders.
Right.
Right? There was no ending. You would just keep playing. You would get a new wave of enemies, and you would fight them off, and then you'd get another wave, and it would keep going until you finally lost your last life. What it did have was a high score.
Yes.
So you could put your initials in and have the high score on that console. And this was a new concept back in 1978. So people began to compete with each other to try and get that high score. And it meant that people were spending more money playing these games.
I mean, the game's really sticky, as they say these days.
Right. Because you would establish your score, and then you would have to defend it. Because if someone else beat your score, well, then you'd have to go back and try and beat their score so you could get it again. And yeah, that ended up being a huge hit. The next three big games that Midway released back in the early 80s were Defender.
Ah, yes.
Where you would shoot aliens and try to defend your human colony against them.
Yes.
There was Robotron.
Oh, 2084. Yeah.
So Robotron introduced a new control system. It had two joysticks.
Yep. The left one you would use to move your character with. And
right.
The right one you would use to control your guns, essentially.
Right.
And they were eight-way joysticks.
Right. You would direct your laser fire using the right joystick. And this setup actually served as a model that ended up being used in other games in the future, including Smash TV and Total Carnage.
Yes.
That'll come into play a little bit later. The third game is probably the most famous video game of all time, arguably the most famous video game of all time. You could maybe make a case for Pong or Space Invaders, but it would be Pac-Man.
Yes, I don't think any of the others spawned a whole album of music.
Right, or a dance and a cartoon.
A hit single, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, so Pac-Man was... there's just really no way of saying how big it was. It was enormous. If you were growing up in the 80s, you knew what Pac-Man was.
Yes. And, of course, Pac-Man was licensed from Namco, who still owns the rights to it now.
Yeah. But, Midway didn't necessarily develop these games. Midway was the American and European carrier, the publisher of these games. Mm-hmm. So that's an important distinction. Now, Midway has, of course, developed and published its own games as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But these early successes are mainly Midway licensing the titles from other companies and then publishing them under the Midway name. Mm-hmm.
Which still makes it quite a bit of money.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So then in 1983, the pinball divisions of Bally and Midway officially merge. It becomes Bally Midway Manufacturing Company.
Ah, yes.
And 5 years later, they were published by another – Midway was published by another big electronics company, one that also had its name on several pinball machines.
Mm-hmm.
Williams.
Yes.
Williams Electronics.
We talked about them quite a bit in our pinball podcast.
So yeah, Bally, Williams, Midway, these names have always been big. And you know, you start to see how they kind of mesh and merge throughout the years. So in 88, that's when Williams Electronics purchases Midway. And in 1991, Williams starts to incorporate its own gaming division with Midway's gaming division. So they're not just, you know, it's not just a subsidiary company. They're actually merging together.
Mm-hmm.
The first game that they produce is Total Carnage, which I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a sequel to Smash TV, which came out under the Williams name.
Right.
Total Carnage was the product of both Williams and Midway working together. And there were two developers who worked on Total Carnage who also became famous later on for the Mortal Kombat games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Ed Boon and John Tobias.
Right.
Noob Saibot! that only makes sense if you've played some of the Mortal Kombat games. But yeah, they both worked on Total Carnage. Ed Boon actually did a voice for it, and Tobias did some of the art for it. And then in 1992, that's when Mortal Kombat actually launches.
Mm-hmm.
And you could say that this game was also a hit.
Maybe just slightly.
Yeah, another big, big hit. Huge controversy on this game because
it was very, very gory.
Very violent, lots of blood. I mean, you have a game where after you finish defeating your opponent, you can, if you know the right sequence of joystick and button moves, finish him with a fatality. And the fatalities, although really when you look back at those early fatalities and really all the fatalities in the Mortal Kombat franchise, they're over the top and to the point where I think of them as silly. The first time you see it, you might be like, wow, that's cool. That guy grabbed the other guy by the head and ripped out his entire spine. But really, when you watch it like for the fourth or fifth time, you're like, yeah, that's kind of stupid. But I mean, you know, it was cool at the time, and it was a neat idea. And it also made that game very sticky because everyone wanted to learn not just how to play each character because each character's moves were different. And the combinations you had to use were different. They need to learn each character's fatality. And as the game series goes on, they introduced more fatalities so that each character had more than one. And they had different flavors, not just the fatalities, but things like the babality, where you would turn into a little baby,
mm-hmm.
or the friendship, where you would, instead of killing your opponent, make them feel better by perhaps presenting them with some flowers. But they had, you know, or animality, or, yeah, I guess it had to be animality because the other alternative would have been really unfortunate. Animality, where you would turn into an animal and then disable your opponent that way. I think Chris just got my joke.
I am, I'm pretending not to listen.
Okay. Several sequels follow the Mortal Kombat series. Right around that same time, Midway released one of the biggest arcade games ever in terms of earnings.
Mm-hmm.
NBA Jam.
Ah, yeah.
Now, yep. NBA Jam, I actually enjoyed playing NBA Jam. I don't typically like playing sports games. NBA Jam, of course, being a basketball game. It's a 2-on-2 basketball game.
Right, right.
I'm not big on sports games in general. I'm not a big sports fan. I'm not particularly good at sports games. But NBA Jam was an arcade-ish sports game in that the emphasis was not on accuracy by any means. It was on outlandishness and fun gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Fun being, of course, a subjective term.
Okay. If I get what you're saying here, what you're saying is it wasn't necessarily realistic.
Not at all.
It was intended to be amusing. I mean, something that amuses you and keeps you going and you're enjoying yourself, but it's not necessarily – the physics aren't necessarily exactly accurate.
Right.
Like, for example, the difference in something like Gran Turismo being a realistic car game, which is not Midway, it's not, but I'm saying
versus like burnout
where it's the point is just
ridiculous,
to run into things and
ridiculous in a good way, by the way, so don't yell at me.
Absolutely, both are good games, but they're different because the point is not burnout is not to be hyper realistic, it's to just it's a simplified version of the game that's just there for you to have fun with.
Right.
So NBA Jam is sort of like that.
Yeah, and it was a four-player game. Up to four people could play, so one per character.
In arcades that I would go to, it was always very, very popular.
And that's how these machines earned so much money so quickly, because it was usually an expensive one to play.
Mm-hmm.
And you had four people playing at once, so you're earning around maybe like up to $4 a play. And everyone's eager to play it. So, yeah, that one was a huge hit for Midway financially. It also served the basis of other sports games that they released later on that had followed a similar philosophy, things like NHL 2-on-2 and NBA Ballers and NFL Blitz.
Yep.
Which are more arcade-style sports games.
Yeah.
The next thing I wanted to talk about was that Midway in the early mid-90s purchased another big name in gaming.
Ah, yes.
Atari Games.
Yeah, we need to do a podcast on Atari.
Yeah.
Because Atari has had several lives.
Yes, Atari has split and reformed and split and died and been reborn so many times.
The name has been purchased and put on stuff.
It's actually a very complex thing to talk about. So Midway purchased one of the companies called Atari Games.
I think if I'm not mistaken, we're talking about the arcade version.
Yeah. Yeah, because Hasbro Interactive owned the other Atari. In fact, Midway didn't just purchase Atari Games, but they renamed it. They eventually renamed it Midway Games West,
right?
Because they wanted to avoid the confusion of the other Atari Games, which was owned by Hasbro.
Mm-hmm.
And then they produced some games through there, like WrestleMania, the arcade game WrestleMania, Killer Instinct, which. That was huge when I was in college, and that was an older game when I was in college. It didn't just come out, but
well, some of these things are timeless. There are still new versions of Pac-Man being introduced, and people still love playing it.
This is true. Rampage World Tour, that was another game.
I used to love Rampage.
Yeah, this one was one of the sequels, not the original Rampage.
Right,
and then the Midway decided to branch out. Not just making arcade and console games. Really, they were still focused on arcade games at this time. So in 1995, they tried something new.
Mm-hmm.
They financed and released a film of one of their properties. It was not Pac-Man.
No, it was not Pac-Man.
It was Mortal Kombat.
Yes, it was.
And Paul W.S. Anderson, not Paul Wes Anderson, which is confusing enough, was the director.
Mm-hmm.
And the film ended up meeting with some success.
Yeah.
Quite a bit, actually.
I've never seen it. I know that shocks you.
Didn't see Mortal Kombat?
Well, I was never a fan of the game. I've never enjoyed really the fighting games, like Street Fighter.
Yeah.
And which is not Midway. As a matter of fact, Mortal Kombat was supposed to be the competitor. Yeah.
To Street Fighter.
But
as Tekken is, in a way, an answer to Street Fighter.
Sure.
One would say.
But yeah, I mean, I've never been, so I wasn't really interested in that. But yeah, I do remember it meeting with some success. Although, I remember people saying that it was sort of a silly movie.
Okay, Mortal Kombat was awesome, and it once again helped to cast Christopher Lambert in a character whose nationality is totally not the same as the actor's.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. I mean, we're talking about the same actor who was is Lambert French or Belgian? I can't remember. I think he's French. And he was cast, of course, as the Scottish Highlander in the Highlander movies when you had the real Scott being an Egyptian character, which going under a Spanish name, that's neither here nor there. Obviously, I'm getting off track with Highlander. But
Keep stalling while
so
I look
you're
it
looking up.
Up
to see if he's French or Belgian. So in Mortal Kombat, he played Raiden, the Japanese storm god.
You're not going to enjoy this.
Uh-oh.
He's American.
Lambert is? Wow. Interesting. Yep. I did not
Born
know
in
that.
Great Neck, Long Island, New York, USA, according to IMDb.
Wow. I was just trying to deport him. but anyway, here he is playing various roles.
Oh, I see what you're saying, because according to IMDb, he left the United States when he was 2 years old. His dad was a UN diplomat, and so he went to school in Switzerland.
Switzerland. See, now that explains the accent.
Yes.
Yeah, it would be the French.
And it might be why he's he's so neutral when it comes to being cast. In
that must be why they can cast him as any nationality.
Right.
At any rate, so he played Raiden. And, the movie met with some success. And, in fact, it got to the point where Midway was kind of getting a little confident about their abilities to enter various forms of entertainment, including the movies. So they made a sequel, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, which did not meet with success. $35 million box office worldwide.
Yeah.
Not good. So that was kind of a flop. They decided to get out of that. There's been talk of another Mortal Kombat movie. And in fact, if you've been on YouTube in the last year or so, actually last couple of months, you may have seen the promo kind of sort of a test for another Mortal Kombat movie. But in this case, it's not even a preview. It's just kind of a reel to show investors to see if you could get money to actually film a full feature-length movie. Mm-hmm. So we may eventually see another Mortal Kombat movie, even though Midway itself is not really – its name is probably not going to be on that anymore.
Well, I think we haven't gotten to the very end of this, but I have the feeling that Midway's current owner will – be able to do something with that, probably.
If they want
considering
to, yeah.
Considering their...
Right, their pockets.
Yes.
So, 1998, Midway becomes a fully independent company. It splits off from WMS, which was the Williams Electronics.
Midway.
Yeah, Williams Midway Company. So, Midway becomes its own company again in 98. And it releases... that same year, it releases Mortal Kombat 4, so like the various games have been coming out. Mortal Kombat 4 does not get a huge amount of positive reviews. Mm-hmm. It was the first one that kind of made it a 3D game as opposed to a 2D game, and that's when we discovered that people kind of like things to be the way they always were. Funny that. So in 99, John Tobias leaves Midway.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he was one of the two guys who brought the Mortal Kombat series to Midway, and he goes off to found his own studio, Studio Gigante, or Gigante. I'm going to get listener mail for that.
Probably.
I am so sorry. Anyway, his studio creates Tao Feng and a couple of other games, but it does not last. It closes in 2005. So sad story for Tobias there in that his efforts ultimately fail.
Mm-hmm.
In 2000, that's when Midway renames Atari Games to Midway Games West.
Mm-hmm.
2001, they have a lawsuit begins between Midway and Pandemic Studios, which had been developing games for Midway at that point.
Yep.
That was not pretty. In 2003, that's when Midway closes Midway Games West.
Yes. And I have information that suggests that the coin-operated video game business was sold off in 2001.
Yeah. Yeah, to Hap Controls Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that so they at that point, the arcade business is really pretty much gone.
Yeah.
By 2001, you don't have that many arcades anymore. You've got a few places like Dave & Buster's. You've got a few independent arcades, and you've got some student centers at various universities. But really, the days of the old arcade in the mall are pretty much over.
Kind of ironic considering the home console bust in the 80s.
Right.
That it recovered so significantly that it is essentially replaced going out to the mall. And
home consoles
playing games
eventually cannibalized the arcade industry, just as they were threatening to do when they first appeared in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s.
There's a massive comeback there.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting to see that cycle. So 2003, Midway closes Midway Games West and opens a San Diego studio, but don't get too attached to it. As they start purchasing other companies, including one called Surreal Software, which released some games like The Suffering. Mm-hmm. I've actually played The Suffering, which is a pretty intense game for the Xbox. It may be for other platforms as well, but I played it on the Xbox. Then in 2005, they sign a deal with Cartoon Network to create some games based on the Adult Swim lineup of programs.
Right.
And then in late 2005, Midway shuts down the Australia studio and the San Diego studio.
Right.
So, 2003, they opened the San Diego studio. 2005, they close it. They also, in 2005, buy another studio called Ratbag Games, which makes a phenomenal title based on the Dukes of Hazzard movie, which is about as good as you expect.
Yeah, I heard not so positive things from the fans around the Ratbag acquisition.
Here's a rule of thumb. A rule of thumb is that video games based upon television shows, movies, comic books, and cartoons tend to not be very good. Well, there are notable exceptions.
Midway had released other games related to the movies and TV shows, such as Tron and Discs of Tron.
Which were awesome.
I enjoyed them very much.
Yes.
Both of them.
Like I said, there are notable exceptions. There are certain games that are based on these kind of properties that are amazing. But for every amazing game you get 10 ETs.
Oh.
Or Superman in 64.
No, frankly, I think there's only one E.T.
We should be thankful. So
that is particularly awful.
So 2008, we're jumping ahead a bit here, but Midway's been suffering. Okay, they've not been raking in the revenue to be able to pay off the loans that the company has taken in order to stay in business, and those loans have started to really accumulate. By 2008, they shut down a Los Angeles office. They move the operations back to San Diego. They shut down the Austin office, which was developing some pretty cool games at the time. I remember I had friends in Texas at the time, and they were very upset. I no longer have those friends. In December of 2008, the fellow holding 87% interest in the company sells it off.
That's yes.
Sumner Redstone. You may be familiar with that name.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Are you? Redstone, that's a pretty famous name.
Yeah, if you pay attention to media at all, you're probably familiar with Sumner Redstone's name.
Yes, Redstone's
many,
huge.
Many media properties.
Things like CBS.
Details.
So Redstone sells his controlling interest. He had 87% of the ownership of that company, and he sells it to an investor named Mark Thomas, and he sells it for $100,000. And think about this for a minute, guys. This is the company that brought Pac-Man to America.
Yes.
And it's essentially being the ownership of this company, more or less, is being sold for $100,000.
That makes a statement.
Yeah, how the mighty have fallen might be that statement. Now,
he didn't have much confidence that it was going to improve.
And not only that, but also we should also point out, or I'll point out that, the company at that point had over $200 million in debt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just Midway alone had $200 million in debt. But
yes.
Sumner Redstone had bigger problems to worry about, because the parent company that owned Midway at the time the parent company that Sumner worked through in order to own this 87% ownership. Mm-hmm. This is really complicated when we get into this. We need
business
how
deals
business
often
works.
Are.
But the parent company was called National Amusements.
Mm-hmm.
It had $1.6 billion with a B dollars in debt. So Redstone had some big problems to worry about, and so getting this other debt-filled property off his hands was probably seen as quite the boon, so to speak. Not the Ed Boon, but the boon. So he sells it to Mark Thomas. Now, in February of 2009, Midway declares bankruptcy.
Right.
And then later on that year is purchased by Warner Brothers for $33 million.
Yes.
So, and Warner Brothers closes the corporate headquarters of Midway, which was located in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That office closes. That was kind of like the end of an era, because that was really the heart of Midway. The company really kind of doesn't exist anymore. It's been folded into the Warner Brothers Interactive division for video games.
Right. The people who are developing properties for it are basically doing so now under Warner Brothers' name.
And we should be specific. Warner Brothers only purchased certain intellectual property from Midway. So other parts of Midway were sold off to other companies.
Yeah.
And some of them just shut down because no one bought them. The San Diego one shut down. Newcastle shut down. So it's not that Midway now belongs to Warner Brothers. It's certain properties of Midway belong to Warner Brothers, most notably the Mortal Kombat franchise. But like NBA Jam went to a different company, and I don't remember who it was, but I know it was not Warner Brothers. EA, I think it went to EA. I think they're producing NBA Jam for the Wii. So
I had no idea.
Yeah, I saw that at E3. I was trying to remember. I was like, wait, it was the really big, loud booth. Which one was that? It was EA. So, yeah, the company is pretty much no more. What remains of the company, the people who worked for the company are either working for Warner Brothers or some other studio, mm-hmm. or they're sadly looking for work. It's really kind of a tragic tale because you think about some of the games they released, like like Pac-Man, Defender, Spy Hunter, the Mortal Kombat series, NBA Jam. You think about these games and you're like, wow, this company really made some blockbuster games. But it just shows that the hard times when they hit the video game industry really hit Midway hard. Mm-hmm. It did not make the transition to console games fast enough or effectively enough. And I would say the combination of some poorly timed purchases and some less than stellar games really did them in. And mm-hmm. plus backing movies like Mortal Kombat Annihilation probably didn't help.
Right. So you told us what your favorite is. Do you have a sleeper favorite? One that wasn't a big hit that you really enjoyed?
I'd have to look at the entire, I'd have to look at the entire library of Midway games to tell you. And I did not do that, so I can't really.
Well, there are lists out there. And, yeah. I'm not sure how authentic they are. I'm pretty sure they're fairly accurate, but I do have a couple because I didn't realize that Tron was a Midway game.
Tron's way up there. That was always a great game.
But I always enjoyed, actually discovered this one in college, Trog, which was really fun, a very cartoony Pac-Man-esque game where you played a caveman.
I vaguely remember Trog.
You played a dinosaur running from a caveman. It was just very, very funny. Game. I mm-hmm. just enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And Tapper.
Yes.
Root beer Tapper, for the different, bar.
I had root beer Tapper for the Apple IIe.
I really enjoyed that. That, as far as I can tell, now I haven't done any research on this at all, but I'm pretty sure that game may have launched the whole time management thing, which is so big in casual games with the diner dash and all the other dashes and, move stuff over here. You better hurry or you're going to get, your customers are going to leave or whatever. That was the first time management game I saw, and I played that in, high school.
Hmm.
Actually, junior high school.
Well, Midway Games,
stuff.
We hardly knew ye. rest in peace. Your games shall live on. And these companies are going to continue. Various companies are going to continue the franchises because there's going to be a new Mortal Kombat game coming out very soon. I actually got to see a demo of that at E3, and it was just as gloriously violent, over-the-top, ridiculous as all the other Mortal Kombat ones. It actually goes back to the philosophy of the original Mortal Kombat game, so I think fans will be pleased.
Mm-hmm.
And, that'll wrap this discussion of Midway Games up. We'll probably do profiles on other companies in the future, and not just video game companies, but other electronics companies.
Sure.
And computer companies. And so we're going to wrap this up. If you have any topic suggestions, if there's a particular company you would like us to talk about, write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. TechStuffHSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes, Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.